This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Sabres off their loss in Carolina, home to Montreal tomorrow. A visit here, we're glad to say, from Kevin Adams, Sabres GM. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for being on with us.
No problem. How you guys doing?
Good. Apologies for the curveball here, but I just thought of this. In the update, Zach mentioned Hard Knocks. You're familiar with Hard Knocks, I'm going to assume, maybe, in the NFL. I wonder if you've ever thought about what that would be like for you as a GM, if you had, like, you know, kind of like full, almost full access, maybe. I think one reason why we don't have it this year is because it kind of went really badly for the Giants GM last year, talking about Saquon Barkley. Have you ever thought about what that would be like?
Well, I have, and part of it is because it's some of the Board of Governors meetings that I've been at, or general managers meetings. You know, one of the things that's discussed at the league level is just the world we live in. There's more and more access. You know, you look at the shows like the Formula One and the golf show, and it really, one, it draws in fans, and it helps the fan base get to know people on a personal level and connect. So I totally get it. So I just think we have to be more accepting, and I'm totally on board with it. I do think there are times it can be tricky, just because, you know, you may be having a conversation that you need to be really honest about something, but you may not necessarily want it to be out, you know, everywhere in the world. So that could be tricky, but I just think it's probably where we're headed in the world, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I haven't seen I've seen it promoted, but I have not seen it. I'm not even sure that it's out yet. They've done some behind-the-scenes stuff around the Four Nations. I think that's going to be out. I forget what carrier, Prime, or wherever it's going to be. But I feel like the closest we got to that, Kevin, do you remember, like, when the Winter Classic was still a relatively new thing? Like, after the Sabres first won in 08, the next couple, HBO did a really great job of presenting those. And I thought that those were relatively, you know, no holds barred, you know, kind of. You know what I mean? I'm sure there was stuff that ended up edited out, but
in the locker room after games,
yeah, like there was, I thought that was really compelling. And no kidding, Kevin, like you know the ride my kid took us on as a family with hockey and how it ended, but I think part of the spark for him to want to chase it as hard as he did for as long as he did was seeing those shows.
Yeah, no, and I get that. I think there's something special about letting people kind of see behind the curtain a little bit, and understanding some of what goes on, and whether it's with an athlete or a coach or a manager, you know, behind the scenes, the stress, the stuff that you're dealing with that maybe fans don't really get to see. So I think that's the great part of it. And, you know, I will say we do a lot of those embedded,
yep,
whether it's
mm-hmm.
the draft or it's, you know, even the trade deadline coming up. And I do have to be honest, like, I think about it for a minute when they put the mic on, kind of clip it on my shirt, and it's on there for the next 12 hours. And after about 2 minutes, I don't even think about it anymore. So it is something that I think once you get into, you're just doing your job. And, you know, I guess also trusting that the people, hopefully it comes across the right way, that
right,
you're trying to portray the right things. And, you know, that's, but it's, I agree with you. I think it's a great thing for the game, and hopefully there's more and more of that in hockey.
I hope so too. I usually come away from any of that stuff liking the people more. You know, you don't really know them, and then you start to see how they really tick and what's actually being said. And I think for someone in your position, or any GM or coach even, like you said, it might end up looking good on you if you ended up doing a show like that. So we'll see.
Well, I do think there's a personal part. You know, I think that's one of the special, the reason people love sports other than just loving the game is you really want to believe in something, and if you like the people you're that are a part of your team as on a personal level, mm-hmm. I think it's even going to grow the love for that team or that sport more. So like I said, I think you're seeing interviews now, guys, where guys are walking down the 10th fairway doing it, interviews, and that's right. Or on the baseball field, ball's going to be hit out the left field and guy's talking while he's running to catch the ball. That's you couldn't do that in hockey. That's a little extreme, but it is where we're headed.
Good point. All right, Kevin. So last night, a step back for your Sabres team that had been on a pretty good roll here through the 2 week break. I'm sure you were hoping for and even expecting more last night. Were you expecting a lot more? I got pretty fired up for this game last night, thinking the Sabres are coming and let's see what it looks like. But it just kind of got away. It stayed a game, stayed close enough, but it kind of was pretty ugly early.
Yeah, it was. We weren't ready to play at the level you need to play at against a team that is, first of all, an excellent team at home, and was a little angry coming off of not maybe having the results that they are used to or, traditionally have been getting over the last few years. So going into a game, you know that you're going to get their absolute A game, and they brought it, and we just weren't ready to match it. And to me, what I didn't like was I just thought we got outskated, outcompeted, and you just, you're not going to win every game, that's for sure, and it's tough on the road, but, when you compete and you skate and, you got to give yourself a chance, and I just didn't think we started the game the right way, and then we got it back, got ourselves back into it there and played some good hockey, but just, not good enough, and we need to learn from it.
I listened to and watched Lindy's post-game news conference, and his frustration with the power play was very evident and, I think well-placed given the way he talked about it. And I think this is fair. That had a chance to put you completely back in the game in the second period and just could not seem to get it going. And 5-on-5, we've been talking about it a lot this week, Kevin. Your team has had very good results for a long time. It's not just a small sample size, 5-on-5, performing, scoring, playing overall, but the power play is just stuck in the mud. What is that? Is it personnel? Is it the coaching? What is the problem with the power play?
Well, I agree with you that it hasn't been nearly good enough. When I look at the talent on the ice, for me, it's not a talent issue. It's an execution issue at times. It's maybe a little bit of a stubbornness issue that we want to do it a certain way, and instead of maybe at times just how about we just go out, work the team, and put the puck at the net and go score a dirty goal around the net, and kind of just that mentality. So I don't know how to say this that makes sense, but there's times where you may not score on the power play, but you actually can help your team gain momentum. You feel mm-hmm. good about it. And then there's times where you actually just absolutely suck the life out of the game because your power play goes and just, can't get in the zone or whatever it is. So it's not just about do you score, although that's certainly the goal and what you want to do, right. But it's about how is the process of it. And it hasn't been good enough. And I do think it started the year. We started the year poorly. That was a big issue early. We have been better at different chunks of the season. But I totally agree. Last night was a game that, we get one there in the power play. It's a one goal game, and now even a game that you've been outplayed, you're giving yourself a chance to at least pick up a point, and we didn't do it.
But that was the point Lindy made exactly after the game, that not only did you not score, but it gave them energy.
Exactly, and you got 18,000 people that are, revved up, and you have to find a way to execute. And, there's different schemes, obviously, teams use and systems and the special teams. And, I think sometimes we're still a team that gets stubborn, and we believe we can do things a certain way based on how we want to do it and not necessarily what the game gives you. And that's us. That's something we need to mature and grow. And like I said, I think there also has to be a mentality on the power play of, just go out, work the other team. Go out, work the penalty kill, and then some of the talent will take over. And I think at times we want to show how talented we are and forget the work part.
With Sabres GM Kevin Adams, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, the trade deadline is in 1 week. Where do you stand, Kevin, on sort of your outlook here with there having been, as we've talked about, some winning lately to make it a little closer? Is it close enough with 25 games to go where you might go in that direction, or what are you thinking?
I think just when I take a step back, you know, what we've done in the standings hasn't really, you know, changed philosophically how we're approaching the deadline. And what I mean by that is, you know, I think Lindy's been public about it in terms of we look at these five game segments. You know, we went 4-1 before the break. You know, now coming out of the break, we're 2-1 and give, you know, have a chance to be picking up 7-8 points out of every five game. That's kind of the goal that we need to play at. And that's a challenge, but that's where we are. But that really doesn't change in terms of our approach to deadline. I'm wide open. I've told every manager in the league that I'm open to looking at everything. I'm willing to talk about everything, but what I want to do is help our team get better. And, you know, I'm not opposed to making a deal, even, you know, whether it's a core player or someone on a contract long-term, whatever that is, but I'm not doing it to, you know, futures and, you know, kind of doing that type of deal. I want to help our team and, you know, making a hockey trade that, like me did last year with the Byron Mittelstadt swap. Is there something out there that we can do? So that's the focus. That's how we're approaching this deadline. But I'm open to everything, and, you know, we'll see where it goes over the next week. This is a busy time of year, as you guys can imagine.
I think when we talked last month, we got into Byram, and if we did, I apologize if this is repetitive. What do you think with him moving forward here? Like, is he? I mean, you mentioned you would take calls on everyone, and I think that's where you should be considering where your team is. He's an RFA coming up. Is he someone you could think about as a core piece with Dahlin and Power, or does somebody have to move, and is it him? Like, what? How do you view Byram right now moving forward?
Yeah, I've really liked his season. I think he's been excellent for us. He's a guy that we really valued before we made the trade, obviously, and, you know, targeted and watched for a while, and I would say for me personally, he's even exceeded expectations of his play on the ice, and he's a leader. He's a gamer. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's got just the right kind of swagger where no moment's too big for him. So this is a guy that we see in a role right now. He's been excellent paired with Dahlin. So, you know, our intention is to, you know, talk to his agent after the season and make sure that there's his comfort level is to be here, and we'll work on getting that done. But I think he's just been a guy that, you know, we'd like to move forward with for sure.
A couple more minutes with Kevin Adams. I'm curious what your plan is or your thinking at the moment is on Devon Levi. I haven't watched Rochester, but I've heard a lot of good things about his season. Roseanne down there, too, I've heard is having a great season. But with Luukkonen signed, do you have sort of a strategy, you think, for Levi that's optimal?
Well, you know, I think anytime you have a young player, a goaltender, but young player in general, if you're not going to be getting a ton of playing time in the National Hockey League, you know, you want to make sure that they're developing and they're playing a lot. And so, you know, we were able to do that last year between the NHL and AHL games. Devin played quite a bit, you know, over the course of the season. And now, you know, this year obviously started with us. We were in a situation a little bit early where just the way our schedule fell, we had some breaks and we, you know, Lindy was riding UPL a little bit more. And so we wanted to just get Devin playing. Moving forward, I have a lot of belief in Devon Levi. I think he's going to be an excellent National Hockey League goalie. You know, for me, there's never a bad thing to let him feel the pressure of being a number one and carrying it. They have an excellent team in Rochester. I think they're, as of the other day, they were the number one team in the American Hockey League and also very young still, and feeling that in the playoffs. And then we'll go from there. But nothing's really changed with our long-term focus. You know, we expect them to be a really good Buffalo Sabre. And, you know, the time that will tell us when it's the right time, meaning, you know, where he is in his game and can he help us win hockey games here.
This is something I know we brought up last time, or I brought up specifically last time. Zucker and Greenway, UFAs, important players on your team. A team that's not in a playoff spot usually sells those off for what you can get. But I know last time we talked to you, at least on Zucker, you had talked about talking to him and talking to his representation. Is there any change to how you guys are looking at both of those guys?
No, and I'm glad you brought it up because, you know, I do think, Bulldog, it's important to kind of, you know, take a step back and you think about, you know, the plan we put together and going back 4 or 5 years now. And when we had to, we're in a position where we had to trade away the players that we did. And there's I don't have to go through the names. You guys know them. That was something that was challenged to do. We were forced to do it. And we had to take an honest look at how do we build this moving forward. And, you know, we had to be very disciplined with drafting and developing players, trying to strategically make trades to add to the group, which we've done, and then make sure that we could retain guys that we felt were going to help us win moving forward. And both Jason and Jordan have become, you know, very important players in the locker room, the way they carry themselves, important players on the ice. And these are guys that we've indicated to both their agents we'd like to have them here. We'll keep working at it over the next week. If we can't get a deal done, you know, we just certainly don't have to trade them Friday either. I mean, we have them mm-hmm. until July 1st, so and we can keep working at it. But if I felt that we were in a position with one of them or both of them, I'd say that I guess better, that we weren't able to get them signed and there wasn't a future, then, you know, we have to look at that. But we're certainly our priority is to have them stay with us here.
Very good. Thanks for your time as always, Kevin. Good luck tomorrow night.
Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
You too. Kevin Adams on the West Her Hotline. Lines open at 803-0550. The combine keeps rolling. Your buddy, that safety, is killing
uh-huh.
it. You already know.
Yeah.
A lot of people are texting you, I imagine.
I get text alerts from Indianapolis.
When it comes to Nick Emmanuel,
I signed up for Emmanuel Watch.
I guess not to worry about how he'll do in these different physical challenges.
No worries about Emmanuel. Oh, God.
Warren Sharp has 43-inch vertical for Nick Emmanuel, safety, at 6'3", 220, best by anyone weighing at least 200 pounds in combine history. 220, 43 inches, and also an 11-foot, 6-inch broad jump. Second longest broad jump by a safety weighing at least 220 since 2003.
Freaky, deaky, athletic profile is what we've got going on there.
So cross him off too? Won't make it to 30? Is that where we're at? Like, kind of the guys that we like the most from the combine that are the most, you know, spectacular athletes, just not going to be available.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, he safety is not usually a top half of the. There's been exceptions, and a part of the reason why it's often not a top half of the first round or even a first round position is that some of the guys drafted highly like that. Jamal Adams comes to mind. There's another safety out of Texas named Barron, I think.
Yes.
That just didn't really. You know, they've had careers. Adams has mostly been undone by injury, I suppose, more than anything else. But just the payoff has not been there. But Kyle Hamilton, meanwhile, like maybe that's the mold breaker, and that's going great. I mean, I think he has helped transform that Baltimore defense by his versatility. So, yeah, I wonder if a guy like this, Emmanuel, you know, you get the rankings at the start of all this process, and he's somewhere in the range where they're like, oh, yeah, well, maybe it would be even a reach in the first round. And then the testing starts and all the stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if some team in the teens sees all this and meets with him and just goes, yeah, I just need this dude on the field for me somewhere. So I don't know if the Bills will get a look at him, but I fell in love with the athletic profile as soon as I read about him.
Mark Barron,
thank you.
Alabama.
Tampa, I think he went to Tampa.
Yep. So we were at the field house for this draft, 2012.
Okay.
The Bills drafted Stephon Gilmore at 10. One pick after Carolina picked Luke Kuechly. And didn't we hear like the Bills wanted Luke Kuechly?
That sounds right. Yes, I wanted them to want Luke Kuechly. I remember that.
There's at least that.
I at least know that.
You wanted it.
Yep.
It was kind of big for McDermott's career that he was the player he was for Sean's defenses in Carolina. Stephon Gilmore's a Hall of Famer, right?
Ooh.
Defensive player of the year.
Probably.
Started in a Super Bowl.
Yeah, he's had a very good career.
And he's in Carolina now, or he was. Minnesota? He was in Carolina. Gilmore?
I think he got
21.
He got to Minnesota. Yeah, he was in Minnesota this year, right?
Minnesota. He's been on five teams the last 5 years, five different teams. Mm. New England, Carolina, Indianapolis, Dallas, and the Vikings. Gilmore.
He made a play in the AFC title game against Jacksonville that maybe kept New England in the Super Bowl, because that it was a late pass down the field and the guy was open, and the way I remember it, had to like leap and one hand batted away, and like if he doesn't make that play and the guy doesn't drop it, it's a touchdown and Jacksonville's in front and it's pretty late in the game.
And then Blake Bortles and Doug Marrone would be Super Bowl heroes, potentially.
Right. I mean, there still was time. I don't know how late it was. I mean, Brady could have driven down. Whatever. It was a huge play in the AFC title game Gilmore made for New England.
That would be
18.
18, yeah.
That's the Minneapolis Miracle season.
No, it's 17.
Right, the 17 season, 18. January of 18.
Right, sorry. January of 18, and they lose to the Eagles.
Yeah. Sorry, I know that so specifically because I remember watching the Minneapolis Miracle before my wife and I got on a plane to go to Costa Rica for the first time, and then I watched the championship games from a brewery in a treehouse in Costa Rica.
Not Treehouse Brewery.
No.
The Jaguars with 13 minutes to play, under 13 minutes to play in that AFC championship, had a 10-point lead and the ball. And had 4th-and-1 at their 42, and they punted, and they lost.
Hmm.
And did we like that punt because it was 2012? Was that supposed to be smart? 4th-and-1, up 10 in the AFC Championship at New England. The Jaguars. Not many are old enough to remember this, a year where the Jaguars
were good.
Were that close to a championship, or at least a conference championship.
That's the Jaguars team that beat the Bills in the playoffs in the wild card game.
I guess so. 17, right. That would have been.
That's that team. Yeah.
And they beat the Steelers, too, right in between in a high-scoring game. All right, 803-0550. Again, the number, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, back after the update on WGR.